Hello, and welcome to episode 448 of the official EstablishTheRun.com podcast. My name is Adam Levitan. I'm one of the co-founders here at ETR, and we are coming off of a sample size means something now kind of week. Yes, that's right. I think the sample size conversation is a hard one. I think at this point, everyone who listens to this podcast understands that evaluating how players are used rather than their box score results is a way to cut through a ton of the noise, a good way to cut through a ton of the noise. I also think everyone listening to this, although certainly not most people on earth, but hopefully everyone listening to this understands that one NFL game has an incredible amount of variance and randomness in it. But I will say that just chalking everything up to, oh, it's a small sample, ignore it. I think that misses the boat a ton, especially early in the year. And in week three, the week we just came off of, some of that stuff was really crystallized. You know, I was super high on DJ Moore coming into the season. I'm certainly not giving up on DJ Moore now by any stretch, especially since the Panthers haven't cracked 60 plays in a game yet, which they will, but they haven't cracked 60 plays in a game yet. And they get the Cardinals next, and DJ Moore is still seeing 23, 24% of the targets. But yes, we have to accept the fact that Baker and this offensive scheme may be far, far, far worse than we could have imagined. You know, I also don't think it's too early to say that Jalen Hurts is a star and a top three fantasy quarterback. I don't think it's too early to say that Christian Kirk with Trevor Lawrence is a huge hit, or Drake London / Garrett Wilson are very good as rookies and on their way to stardom. Like, I don't think it's too early to say that stuff. Now, you know, on the Texans, I thought Davis Mills and Pep Hamilton would be way better. I mean, Davis Mills has been straight up bad, inaccurate, slow. It's just bad. You know, so the target share for Brandon Cooks is great. But can we really compare him to guys in that range? You know, I mean, I'm willing to back off my Davis Mills, Pep Hamilton takes from the summer already. You know, and like Brandon Cooks was 5,800 this past week on DraftKings. T. Higgins was 6,100. I mean, I couldn't believe people were debating this in cash. You know, Brandon Cooks on the road in Chicago in windy conditions with Davis Mills on a shitty field in a horrible game environment, or T. Higgins, an ascending star who gets just as many targets as Ja'Marr Chase with Joe Burrow against the Jets. You know, I mean, I think it can be hard in projections to bake in some of the environment stuff for guys in bad situations. You know, James Conner, I've been way lower on than projections, just a non-explosive player in a woeful offensive scheme. The Cam Akers stuff, you know, yeah, his usage is better lately, but their run game is so broken, can't do much on his own. And then the Brandon Cooks stuff I just mentioned, I felt good about fading Brandon Cooks in DFS despite some really strong projections. It's not dead yet. Brandon Cooks is not dead yet. Texans have had tough matchups, Colts, Broncos, Bears, certainly not great spots, but now they get the Chargers, Jaguars, Raiders, Titans next. So I'm certainly not giving up on Brandon Cooks by any stretch. But I guess my point is that we need to understand where our edge is when we're playing peer-to-peer games like DFS. You know, it's not the same for everyone. Where your edge is not the same for everyone. Clearly, Leone's edge is in game theory and understanding good chalk, bad chalk for tournaments, knowing when and how to be contrarian. You know, I think Dink's edge is in roster construction and forecasting coaching moves. You know, and for me, and yeah, so we got a question from James here. James said, can you give me a number on how much you personally weigh what the projections say versus your gut feel on player level? So I was going to say, you know, I think my edge right now in DFS is finding spots in projections that are more fragile, where the systemic risk in a game or a player is there. And conversely, understanding where a player's floor ceiling combo might be higher despite a similar base projection to someone else. You know, Amon-Ra St. Brown in week two comes to mind. You know, and, you know, the Brandon Cooks stuff, we actually dropped Brandon Cooks out of top plays, our top plays list. We dropped him out on Sunday because of some of this softer stuff, not just the numbers. I'd also add on the Brandon Cook stuff, you know, the PSM, the penis size model, that bit actually started probably, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago. It was a slate where I played Brandon Cooks over AJ Brown. and Cooks airballed. I mean, literally zero catches, and AJ Brown went completely nuclear. And after the slate, I'm sitting there, you know, with $0 in my pocket, thinking about how did I do this? How could I do this to myself? How could I play Brandon Cooks over AJ Brown? I mean, all we had to do was consult the PSM, and it would have been an easy decision. I mean, AJ Brown is just absolutely wrecking Brandon Cooks in that particular metric. So anyways, this past week, T Higgins over Brandon Cooks was big for cash. But obviously, I think the key, at least for me in week three, was getting on Mac Hollins. And let me be clear, I did not feel great about playing Mac Hollins. I preferred Romeo Dubs, but that 500 meant something. It actually meant a lot on this slate. And Hollins playing every single snap in a good matchup with Hunter Renfrow out at 3,300, you know, I thought that was fine. And then, you know, so of course, from a process point of view, I thought it was fine, especially given the context of the slate. And then I run into, you know, a 90th or 95th or 99th percentile outcome or whatever it was on Mac Hollins, just pure, unadulterated, pants off intercourse. One point I did want to make on cash for this past week is that I know some people played Irv Smith and Juwan Johnson together, you know, double tight end. I don't think this is hindsight. I really, really hate doing that. Tight end is so bad. The floor ceiling combos are so bad on tight ends like this. There's major, major opportunity cost in doing that because we only roster 8 offensive players. You're really going to use 2 of your spots on these shitty tight ends with no real ceiling. I get that you're saving a lot of money by doing that, but you're also putting so much pressure on the rest of your lineup. You know, like there's just no ceiling on it. You can never get a 30-point game like you can get from Mac Hollins. I mean, Mac Hollins goes deep downfield. He plays every single snap. You know, game environment for Mac Hollins is better than Juwan Johnson. So even if the base projection is close on Juwan versus Mac, there's just no way you can compare ceiling. And I think at these punt spots, it doesn't really matter if you get 2 or 6. You know, I think we should be swinging for more when we can. As for week 3 DFS tournaments, I made 8 teams by hand, of course, and obviously on my desktop on Sunday morning, like a man. But anyways, got 2 caches. My best team was on FanDuel, was of course the Lamar single. I almost always play Lamar singles, not doubles. And given the Rashad Bateman usage this season, you know, he's only running a route on 70 to 75% of the dropbacks. I've been exclusively pretty much stacking with Mark Andrews. So, you know, we had really low projected ownership on Lamar. And I looked at it and I was like, man, given the rest of the slate, given the other quarterbacks on the slate, given how tight it is, we're probably right. And so Lamar comes in at 2% owned Lamar Jackson in the 2-2-2 on FanDuel. Mark Andrews was also 2%. I used Ramondre Stevenson, 5.7% owned, as the bring back. I mean, an easy stack there, especially with ownership, projected ownership factored in. I know Jacoby Myers was out, and so a lot of people used Kendrick Bourne or Nelson Agholor as their bring back. But on this slate, with running backs so bad, I was just really trying to knock out running back spots. And so I thought Ramondre's week 2 role was quietly really, really good and wanted exposure to him. So made sense to use Ramondre as the bring back there. In this particular lineup, I did go Alvin Kamara and Saints defense. Obviously, that was a disaster from an outcome perspective, but considering the usage that Alvin Kamara got, I actually think that was fine. You know, I feel pretty good about it. And, you know, we got a question from Callum. He says, hey, Adam, sometimes the correct play runs bad and the bad play runs good. What signs do you know if you had good process but bad results? Yeah, the Kamara stuff is a perfect example. I mean, Alvin Kamara handled 75% roughly of the running back usage. With his pass game role, with his goal line role, with his skill set, like at 7K on FanDuel, that's really cheap. And so, yeah, Kamara and Saints defense play didn't work out, but I'm totally fine with the play. I hope that helps, Callum. Also on that team, I went for one of my favorite mini stacks of the week, Devontae Adams and Treylon Burks. You know, I'm not sure why I paid $8,700 for Devontae Adams on FanDuel when the real alpha, Mac Hollins, was basically free. But anyways, that one didn't work out either. Couple one-offs I liked in Garrett Wilson and Drake London. You know, nothing special on this team, but it wasn't the best team by any stretch. But it still finished 90th out of 2,600 people. And that's what happens when the chalk busts, when you don't play any David Montgomery or Leonard Fournette or Steph Diggs or Irv Smith, et cetera. When you don't play any of those guys in tournaments, you can really move up the standings quick when they fail and you just get a couple things to go right. One other point I did want to make on tournaments is the Justin Herbert stuff. I really didn't think he was going to play. And like, I really didn't. But then he does play. So anyone who was behind or had a bad start at the 1 p.m.s in tournaments should have been looking at Chargers stuff to swap to. You know, you just get incredible leverage. I mean, imagine what the ownership on Justin Herbert and Big Mike Williams and Eckler and Josh Palmer and Everett, imagine what the ownership on them would have been if we all knew all week Justin Herbert was playing in a home game against the Jags. But because nobody thought he was playing, Justin Herbert ends up 0.3%. Austin Eckler, 3.5%. Mike Williams, 2.6% owned. Josh Palmer, 0.7% owned, even with Keenan out. You know, Gerald Everett, 3.8% owned. If that's not the evidence you need to know that people aren't late swapping, you know, 95, 98% of the field isn't late swapping, I'm not sure what to tell you. There's just so much leverage to be gained in late swapping, not just on injury news like this, but in all the late swapping stuff that we talk about with what kind of start you get off to and what kind of contrarian or chalky plays you want. I know it didn't work out this time on the Chargers stuff. You know, the Chargers shit the bed, but that was clearly the right move if you were behind at 1 o'clock. Oh, I did want to shout out the winner of the Established to Run DraftKings League GPP $5 buy-in rake free. Be sure in our subscriber only Discord, you can get the link to that tournament. The winner of week three was JT Money 2323. Shout out MJ. He had the Lamar Andrews stack skinny. His bring back was Kendrick Bourne. Also, his mini was Treylon Burks and Mac Hollins, not the Treylon Burks Devontae that I did. Mac was not owned, you know? And sometimes when you get these cheap punts, they're really bad in tournaments because, you know, a 3,300 Mac Hollins at 20% is not what I want to be playing. But he was only 9% in this ETR tournament. He was also 8.8% in the Millie Maker. So, you know, I think at that point, given the context of the slate, it was fine. Also, JT Money 2323 played DK Metcalf and Cordarrelle Patterson mini. He also played JT, which didn't work out, but I thought that was a sharp play. Pay up to be contrarian there. So sharp team. Congrats on the win, man. Nice job, JT Money 2323. Oh, by the way, if you're looking for more on tournaments, I really do recommend listening to both Established a Million on Saturdays with Dink and Leone and then their GPP review show on Monday mornings. It really is the best way to learn about playing tournaments and playing them at a high level. I really do believe that. All right. I know all you guys want to bet on sports. Everyone wants to bet on sports. We've been doing that betting show on Friday nights with King NFL sharp Matt Davidow. It's been pretty popular, where I think it's cool. I'm not saying anyone should be betting on sports, but if you are, it would pain me if you weren't getting the best line every time. You need to have money on all the books that are available to you. And the best part of like always getting the best line and getting money on all these books is that you get these ridiculous sign-up bonuses. They're so ridiculous. It's not going to last. Books aren't going to be spending millions and billions on customer acquisition forever. But while they're doing it, you need to take advantage of it. Go to the props and betting tab on Establish the Run. Scroll down to ETR Sportsbook bonus offers. You'll see all the bonus offers by state. Please, please take advantage of it. All right. Enough is enough. Let's get to everyone's favorite portion of the program, the listener questions. Producer Luke, hit the theme music. Thanks so much to everyone for the questions. Got like 100 or something crazy. I'll get to about 8 today, and then I'll get to some more of them over the next couple weeks. Question one from friend of the show, Ryan Hodge. He says, has zero RB entered the DFS streets? So I've certainly felt a change so far this year through the first 3 weeks. I've felt mainstream people, general people, public people, mainstream media actually start to understand and like get it a little bit on zero RB. It's just becoming so obvious in every format. And I'm not even talking about, you know, the macro strategy, everything behind it. I know all like the strategy behind it and understanding it and executing it. I know talking about all that zero RB stuff really tilts people. It really does. I mean, there's nothing on earth that YouTube or Reddit or Instagram commenters hate more than zero RB stuff. But forget all the macro stuff about it for a second. My thing on it is simple. In season long drafts, when it gets to me on the clock, I just prefer wide receiver almost every time. Not some crazy strategy, not because I just wide receivers are better takes, like just the micro takes. Oh, Adam, do you want Derrick Henry or Steph Diggs? I mean, come on, it's not even a question. Adam, do you want Najee Harris or Devontae Adams? Do you want Cam Akers or Jaylen Waddle? You know, like this stuff isn't even close when it gets to you in season long. And I think people are starting to understand that the solidity of role, floor ceiling combos, replaceability, injury rates are all in favor of wide receivers. You know, running back fantasy points are mostly scored through opportunity. Wide receiver fantasy points are scored mostly through talent, which is much more stable over the course of the year. You know, talent is, which is why leaning wide receiver over and over and over again is so clearly right in season long. You know, just figure out running back later. You know, run into Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Cordarrelle Patterson, Jamal Williams, Khalil Herbert, Damian Harris, Ramondre Stevenson, Miles Sanders, Devin Singletary. Man, I keep going on and on and on about the zero RB targets we had this year before the season. Now, for DFS though, getting back to Ryan's question, it's a bit different because we can project running back usage in a one-week sample just for this coming Sunday. We can project running back usage really, really accurately. You know, there isn't the replaceability issue. There isn't the injury, the wearing down risk. You know, over the course of a season, running back, so many things can go bad for a running back. In this one game, we can project it really, really well. And so in running backs, in DFS, relative to season long, running backs are more valuable. I think week three was a bit of an outlier, you know, with the pricing. There were so few good running back plays and so many sick wide receiver plays in week three. Generally, though, I would say for tournaments on DraftKings, I play four wide receivers to try to get that outside ceiling where it's full PPR and obviously the 100-yard bonus. A lot of weeks, you know, on DraftKings, I would play six wide receivers in tournaments if DraftKings let me. But for cash, the predictability and less volatility at running back, I still typically, not this past week, but typically play three running backs in cash as long as the pricing makes sense, i.e. there's actually three running backs I think are really good plays that fit within the context of the slate. And maybe that won't be keeping the case, you know, three running backs in cash because DraftKings keeps leaving so many strong wide receivers in that 4 to 6K range and they keep making running backs so expensive. So yeah, just something to monitor. Question two from Ernie Freeman. He says, thoughts on men sitting down when peeing. Is it too beta or is it just smart? Less mess, more relaxing, and easier to empty the bladder. That's a scientific fact. You know, Ernie, I mean, Jesus, man, have some goddamn respect for yourself. We're not sitting down while peeing. You know, you can call me a hardo, whatever. Maybe I am a hardo. It's enough already. As for emptying the bladder fully, that is something I do agree with, important stuff. What I do is I find the shortest, you know, the lowest urinal or toilet in whatever setting I'm in, lower the better, because you really want that downward tilt to fully empty. So I actually lean forward. I put both my hands on the wall in front of me, you know, with medical gloves on, of course, but I put both my hands on the wall in front of me and lean forward, and that really empties the bladder fully. It's so good. Question three from Crutches. He says, how do this week's events affect Jamal Williams' PSM rating? I can't believe Jamal Williams got flagged for that. If you watch the video closely, and by the way, if you haven't seen what Crutches is talking about, I tweeted the video of it Sunday night. If you haven't seen Jamal Williams' touchdown celebration. But anyways, Jamal Williams scores, and he does like some Shakira move or something. And he gets like two hands in the air, and then he gives a three pack of pelvic thrust, you know, not just straight out horizontal thrust, Ace Ventura style, but kind of like an up and out, you know, like serious hip rotation. Now, I'm honestly not sure why this is a penalty. He got 15 yards for unsportsmanlike conduct for being on the hashtag team. I mean, that's completely ridiculous. I don't know why, but I guess there was some skit. Everyone started sending me some video from some like Saturday Night Live style bit. I don't even really know who these guys are. I guess Key and Peele or something. It did seem funny though, but I guess they did this bit of a guy thrusting and getting flagged on their show. Seemed pretty funny. So yeah, ridiculous flag. Question four from Tomfoolery. He says, how can best ball drafters know if the winning team wasn't involved in collusion? How difficult would it be for DraftKings or Underdog to release the draft results of the winning lineups? It's a good question. I am the stone cold, most cynical person on earth. I actually hate it about myself, but I really can't help it. I just assume everyone is out to fuck me. They're up to no good. You know, I trust no one. I have thought about Tom's question. What is stopping, say, five nefarious individuals getting together entering the same best ball draft, and four of them making a bunch of reaches and mistakes so that the one person can get exactly what they need, ton of value, you know, maybe two or three rounds past ADP or whatever. They always get their stacks. I would say I know for a fact that Underdog is watching for this and monitoring it. I know there are some drafts that actually get flagged and removed if the software catches shady shit that's going on. As for other sites, I don't know for sure. I think it's totally fair that before you play on a site, it's worth asking. And I also think that you can see the draft, like whoever wins DraftKings best ball or NOG or whatever, 100% you should be able to ask for the draft and see it. You know, that should be standard. I don't think anybody would have a problem releasing that. So yeah, I get it, Tom, and I appreciate the cynicism. Question five from a football friend. You ever wonder if football/gambling is bad for your mental health? Every summer, I'm so psyched for the NFL gambling/fantasy season. Yet when January rolls around and it's over, I feel like I got out of jail and I'm thankful for the break. What about you? Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt, man. There's absolutely no doubt that this stuff isn't great for my mental health. But I don't think that's specific to football or DFS or fantasy football or whatever. I think anytime you are completely consumed by something, obsessed with something that doesn't stop, you know, i.e. there's news and action and things to do for it literally 24/7. Anytime you're into that kind of stuff, it's not good for mental health. You know, balance is for sure better. The flip side of that, of course, is to be really good at something. I think it's important to be completely obsessed and consumed. That goes for anything in life. You know, if you live it, if you breathe it, eventually I think most people will get really good at it if you spend enough time doing it. So the good thing is that with NFL, it's really only a 4 or 4.5 month thing. There's some people out there whose obsession or job or whatever is 12 months a year. You know, they just never get away. It just keeps going, you know, 24/7, 365 for years and years. That, to me, that's how you have a mental breakdown. You never get detached from your obsession. You get detached from your normal life, from your relationships, et cetera. So yeah, I think the way you feel, football friend, is normal. When the season is over, some relief, some break, I think, you know, it wouldn't be normal if you didn't feel good about it. Question six from ESC says, hey, Adam, there's times when a player goes off in a certain week and then duds the next and then goes off again. Even in soccer, when a team wins in a blowout, it's usually sharp to fade them on the next game. I don't know if this is a statistical fact or just results playing mental gymnastics on us. So this is a nuanced question, ESC. Yes, of course, outlier performances regress back to the baseline over time. If someone throws for 469 yards and 6 touchdowns like Tua Tagovailoa did in week 2, he's going to perform worse in week 3, obviously. However, I'd be careful about using that outlier performance to say that Tua will play bad in week 3. You know, there's a difference between playing worse than your 100th percentile outcome or 99th percentile outcome and playing bad. I would be evaluating that week 3 spot more in a vacuum. And that's why it's important to have a quantitative system, a repeatable system that does not have biases. Our projection model, of course, knows what Tua did in week 2. And that's baked in. But we have a massive sample on Tua, and the model won't overreact to one game like your mind might. Now, some players can string together a ton of outlier performances in a row. I mean, I lost so much fucking money during Odell's rookie year when he went nuclear for like 10 weeks straight. I lost when Tyler Lockett had a run a few years ago. It was just a ridiculous run. He was scoring like 2 touchdowns a game for 4 or 6 weeks straight. But I believe the gambling streets are littered with the corpses of people who think they can predict outliers. You know, for every 2 that they get right, there are hundreds of players who people were sure, they were certain, are outliers, but actually weren't. And that's very, very, very expensive to think a guy is an outlier and be wrong. The last thing I would say, and I know this is a controversial thing, I do believe there are spots for teams, quote unquote spots, like the Seahawks in week 1. They play on Monday night. It's such an emotional game against Russ Wilson, the Russ Wilson Revenge Bowl. You know, the Seahawks win it in this crazy fashion by 1 point. And then they're on a short week. They played that game on Monday night during a short week. They have to get focused, get their mind and body right to face the San Francisco team who's coming off this humiliating loss to the Bears in week one. I mean, maybe I'm a fish, but I do think that stuff matters some if you can feel and find the right spots. You know, it doesn't matter a ton, but it matters a little. I'd also add that for DFS, not as much anymore, but generally the field overweights previous week performance. And so does the pricing algorithm. So when a guy goes off in week two, he's likely more expensive and he's likely more owned in week three. And it's a totally different matchup slash spot. So yeah, you know, fading guys who were the key pieces the previous week, there's some ancillary benefits there as well. Question seven from Charles. He says, have you considered that hand building lineups on your phone while shitting is, in fact, the most optimal way to play? The UI UX is optimized for mobile. Complete lack of distraction when locked inside your shame closet. An empty colon equals clear mind. You know, Charles, I hear you on complete lack of distraction. I hear you on empty colon. Those are fine points. I agree. And I would also give you that the UI UX on DraftKings and FanDuel is designed for mobile, you know, clearly. But that's why, that's exactly why there is an edge in going above and beyond, you know, in being a man, in pulling up your chair to your desktop. Actually having two desktops with two separate mouses, two separate mice, you know, have all the information that you need at your fingertips. Because you know what you have at your fingertips when you're making lineups on your phone, Charles? Feces. That's it. I mean, seriously, the reason I need to make lineups on desktop is so that I can have one screen with projections and a ceiling and ownership, one window looking at optimals, one window for reading information, you know, articles, Twitter. I mean, I just couldn't imagine making a team on my phone. Now, again, you guys know me. I have problems. I physically can't knowingly get it in bad. It's just not in me. I just can't have fun. I can't just sit there on the shitter and throw in a lineup and hope for the best. I wish I could do it. I can't. And I'm not saying that everyone should be like me. Not everyone needs to grind their cock to the nub. You know, if you want to just fire for fun while taking a dump, I'm happy for you. You know, I'm actually jealous that you're able to do that physically. It's just not in me. All right, question eight comes from Dave K. He says, no question, just a disclaimer. It's almost ass-eating season. Yeah, I appreciate that note, Dave K. I really do. I'm being dead serious. I need you guys to tell me what's going on out there in the world, what's going on in pop culture. It's so crazy. I guess last week something happened with Adam Levine. I had no idea what was going on with Adam Levine. But shout out to Dave Arrego on our digital media team. He sent me some screenshots that I guess were spoofs of Adam Levine DMs, like with some chicks or something. So Dave Arrego is sending me these spoofs in our Slack. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, I legit have no clue anything's going on with Adam Levine. Apparently it's some huge story in the pop culture world. And I told these guys on the digital media team, I said a zillion times I've told them, I don't watch TV. I don't watch movies. I barely listen to music. You know, I gamble. That's it. And I make sex jokes on the internet. You know, that's it. A lot of times they send me these meme videos on pop culture. I don't even know what they're spoofing. So this is all a long way of saying, yes, Dave K, I need you to tell me that it's ass eating season. I was so shocked last year when this came up that ass eating is now the standard. I had no fucking clue. So again, thank you for your service, Dave K. All right. That is going to do it for another edition of the Solo Pod. I'll be back later tonight with Silva for the team by team pods, where we will recap everything we saw in week three and start looking ahead to week four. Be sure you are subscribed to our YouTube and or anywhere else you are listening to this podcast so you don't miss episodes going forward. And it helps us keep free content like this going. For Bruce or Luke, for Jerry, the most beautiful beast in the world, I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.